I want to welcome our fabulous guest, David Wolf, to the call, buddy. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Dennis. How are you?
Fantastic. I'm as good as it's possible to be this morning.
The feeling is mutual. I just got out of a hot springs. We just spent the morning in the hot springs, then went picking white sage and Yerba Santa, wildcrafting in the hills, jumped in the car, drove down the mountains, and end up here in San Diego, and that's where I'm calling you from today.
Fantastic.
And I guess I can just jump right into it, Dennis. What do you feel? Just get right into the,
the heart matter. Jump right in, buddy. We never went a bit of a format, so it's clean slate time, man. Hit the accelerator.
Here we go. Hey, thanks so much, Dennis and Barry, for hosting the call and being out there on the other end. I wanted to mention to everybody that I first got involved in the field of Ormus due to a very interesting synchronicity that happened one summer day in summer of 1995. I was, and she had heard that I had these audio tapes out on raw foods, superfoods, my focus of my career. And this is again, about 12 and a half years ago. And she said, you know what, I'd like to get those tapes, but I'd like to trade you for my tapes that I have about this one guy. And she just babbled on. I couldn't understand what she was talking about. And I said, I'll trade you. Yeah, I'm always up for a barter. Let's do it. Now, just as a standing rule, I always do a barter with anybody. You know, if somebody has something that's reasonably barterable, I'll barter for it, just because I think that's ethically the right thing to do, morally the right thing to do, and the government can't tax it. So that always felt like a right thing. So I've, from the very beginning of my working career, always felt that barter was ethically, morally, and financially the right move. So I did it. I said, hey, you send me your tapes, I'll send you my tapes, you got a deal. Well, she sent me a packet of David Hudson's tapes. It was recorded lectures by David Hudson. And I started listening to those, and eventually I joined the Science of the Spirit Foundation, which I believe was in October of 1995 when I got into his organization. And I got into it, and I kind of had it on the periphery, but then I went to a raw food potluck here in San Diego, California, sometime in 96. It may have been a year later, maybe not so long. And I met a gentleman by the name of Steve Adler. And Steve Adler and I, our first conversation ever was about Ormus. And Steve, by the way, is a very good friend of Barry's. And Steve introduced me to Barry Carter. But way back then, that was at the very beginning. And Steve said, have you ever heard of this guy, David Hudson? Have you ever heard these tapes? Have you ever heard this, that, and the other thing? And I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm a member of the Science of the Spirit Foundation. I have two memberships. I can't remember if that was $1,000 or $2,000 or what it was that I put into that. But by the way, even though I lost everything on that deal, I gained so much out of it, and I appreciate so much the work that David Hudson has done, even though he's not really on the scene anymore, just to inform us that, in fact, our intuitions are correct, that there's something amongst our, quote-unquote, scientific paradigm, there are some things that are major errors and holes and gaps in the knowledge. I always felt from my engineering background, I come from an engineering background, I have two engineering degrees, mechanical and environmental engineering, a political science degree, which is mostly in Greek philosophy, and a huge educational background, including a master's in living food nutrition at this point, and a JD in law. But all that out of the way, my favorite stuff always was the hardcore science, atomic science, nuclear science, quantum physics, et cetera. And upon the initial investigations that I had into those as a child, I always felt there were major gaps in the knowledge. And David Hudson was the first person to come along that alerted me to where and how those gaps could be there. And that it just became, a huge lever. I guess, it's like having your foot in the door. Suddenly your foot is in the door, and then you can peek in and see exactly where the gaps in the science are and where we can go, where the next developments are going to be in technology, in mineral sciences, in growth technology, growing plants, soil sciences, and atmospheric sciences, and the whole thing. At any rate, at that point, I didn't know one bit of how to make Ormus, anything like that. That was before the White Gold Forums. That was before I had known about Barry Carter. I had never met David Hudson personally, although Steve one night called David Hudson on the phone, had a conversation with him, and then called me after that, and we had a great exchange. It was really, really fascinating. And my goal always had been to somehow come across these things myself. Like, how do you do it at home? How do you do it in your garage? You know, what's the folk technology? And many years later, I met Barry Carter, and Barry Carter was the individual who I believe most carried the energy of the folk technology of Ormus. How do you do this stuff in your house? How can you do it with natural materials? How can you trap this stuff? And what is this stuff? And that really became more clear from Barry's work. So I'm going to now digress a little bit and give you a background about what I feel Ormus is, what are the properties, how does it affect you, how can you take advantage of it, according to the perspective that I've built up over the last 12 or 13 years, which I actually think is 12 and a half years. And then you can take that, cross-reference it against your own experiences, and I believe you'll have something valuable after we're said and done here. Does that sound good to everybody?
Very good.
Sounds good to me, buddy.
Right on. Everybody's probably mooted, so it's cool. Anyway, Ormus, to me, are particles that are in the atmosphere, they're in the geosphere, that are of a unique character. They have of classification as strange matter, and they are not well trapped or captured or analyzed by the cut, burn, poison, analyze theory of science, which is a very male-oriented theory of how you trap atoms or study atoms or look at chemistry or look at atomic chemistry or look at atoms in general. And I'm just going to repeat that again, that our whole system of science is running on this cut, burn, poison, analyze theory. And that there may be things in the biosphere, in the atmosphere, in the geosphere that evade that type of scientific approach. And it appears that Ormus is one of those things that just kind of ducks out of the way of that type of scientific approach or is misrepresented when that type of scientific approach is used. So I really felt very strongly that if we could find ways of naturally trapping these high-energy particles out of the atmosphere, then we could really get somewhere. And that's what first led me to my first, I believe, experiments with Barry Carter's Vortrap and Jim's Vortrap concept. A number of years ago, we started tapping water off of hot springs water and then drinking it and then seeing what would happen in and on top of doing the wet method and other means that Barry does. And Barry describes in his sunlightenergies.com website. Anyway, the vor trapping really was the first time I really understood exactly why this stuff was evading mainstream science and exactly why our mainstream science is so biased. It's just one directional. And we're not looking at more of the female aspects of understanding, the female aspects of science and the female aspects of chemistry and some of the subtler energies that are involved in the life force and in our whole geosphere atmosphere. Over a period of time, we began to discover that if we watered our plants with the trap water, and then I began to use some of the dead sea salt extracts on my plants, well, some miraculous things would occur. And this was expected based on the research that Barry had put together in his website and based on David Hudson's material, and based on some of the other stuff that was going on out in the White Gold Forum world. And I ended up growing an aloe vera plant, and I got it as a little pup. Little baby aloe vera plants are called pups. And I put it inside my old office, and a very miraculous thing happened over a period of 4.5 years of growing this plant. I ended up growing over 100 plants with Ormus extracts in that particular environment, but the aloe vera plant was the main focus, and it was the first one. And I used trap water, which is Vortrap water. If you're familiar with the Vortrap, you're basically sending water through a spiral cylinder, and the bottom half of that spiral cylinder is filled with an array of magnets or one sheet magnet. I think, Thomas, you're on the phone. I think you use a sheet magnet, and we use 96 different magnets. And as the water spirals through that magnetic field, it unwinds, like DNA unwinding, it unwinds the water molecules, and the Ormus will, because of its reaction to centripetal action, will migrate towards the middle and be able to be captured by a collection straw that runs into the middle of that vortex, takes all levitated materials and takes it right out the top of the cylinder and all the heavier materials, all the heavier water comes out the bottom of the cylinder like a sink. And if you're familiar with bore traps, you know what I'm talking about. If you're not, get on the website, get on Barry's site, start looking at that type of technology. Anyway, we use that, Dead Sea salt extracts, all kinds of things, every kind of ormolite. I did Himalayan salt extracts, Celtic sea salt extracts, ocean water extracts, ormolite that I had bought off the internet. Everything had gone onto these plants. But that aloe vera plant, this is what happened. It achieved almost what I would say genetic perfection. It didn't have a blemish on it, not a spot. It glowed luminescent white. People would come into my office and go, what in the world is going on with your aloe vera plant? I've never seen anything like it. It had just this totally magical energy about it. One day I discovered that there was a black widow spider that was living in the bottom of the, just underneath the leaves, the bottom leaves of the aloe. And, you know, I was like, okay, that's no big deal. I was just watering around it. And then this particular black widow ended up doing something that I had never seen black widows do. And I've been around black widows since I was a child. I grew up in Southern California. We have black widows in the East County of Southern California in every garage. They pulled a little web together in a little corner of the garage. You never really have to worry about them. But I never saw a black widow do what this one did. It constructed a web like a fire pole all the way up 8 feet or more, maybe 10 feet, to a light fixture that was in the ceiling. And this aloe vera plant was inside the office next to a window. And so there was a little light fixture inside the office, but above the plant, way up high. And it would come down from that light fixture every day and do whatever it did, and then it would go back up. It's very, very unusual for a black widow spider to do this. Over a period of time, I had carefully avoided touching that particular web because it was near a light switch. But one night, I accidentally touched that light switch. When I was going for the light switch, I accidentally hit that black widow spider web. And it was a miraculous thing occurred, and that is the web literally went upwards. Like, I was holding one end of it was stuck to my finger, and the other end of it literally went straight up into the air as if it was levitating. And that's when I realized, whoa, wait a second. Spider webs are made out of ormus. And this is why no one's ever been able to crack with the cut-burn-poison theory of science what spider webs are made of. Now, I had a bunch of friends over at the time, and I showed them, and we took pictures of it, and everybody was like, whoa. And it was the first time that a few of my friends had ever actually believed me that there was something going on with ormus or Dead Sea salt extract, et cetera, et cetera. At any rate, that particular plant, that aloe vera plant, when I had to move out of that office, I did something that was quite unusual. I took that entire plant, and I moved it to my mom's backyard, who lives in San Diego. And that plant had been its whole life an indoor plant, and I put it right in the middle of the backyard. It had never been in direct sunlight before. It had never seen weather before, anything like that. And in spite of that shock, that aloe vera plant barely reacted and is still growing beautifully at my mom's house today. I also had a noni tree. I have a noni tree here in San Diego. Now, if you know about noni, noni has this high polysaccharide fraction like aloe vera has. David Hudson was the first person to clue me into the idea that in the polysaccharide fraction of goji berries, of aloe vera, in Hudson's work it was aloe vera, of noni, of the medicinal mushrooms, that's where the ormus is. It's in the polysaccharide fraction or the glyconutrient. And if you've studied glyconutrients, you're gonna find out that there's a relationship. If you grow these foods that have a high polysaccharide fraction, you're going to find out that there's a relationship between ormus and the level of polysaccharide in the food. Anyway, so I started growing noni in San Diego. Now, noni does not grow. You can't even grow noni in Tampa Bay. You can barely, if you had all the right technology, everything, you wouldn't even be able to grow it probably even in Miami. There's a couple noni trees in Homestead, which is south of Miami, that, you know, don't produce very much. I have this noni tree that I've been growing in San Diego County outside for 3 years through all weather conditions, including 40 degrees Fahrenheit the other day, with ormus, with trap water, with Dead Sea salt extracts, with all the methods that are out there on the internet of producing ormus. That's gone into the soil of that particular plant, and it is surviving here in San Diego, which is very, very unusual. Anyway, all of this experimentation that I've been doing eventually led me to purchase two farms. One of them is in Ontario, Canada, and the other one is in Hawaii. And on those farms, we are doing huge experiments with a very particular idea. And I'm going to reiterate this idea again so that everybody can kind of tune in on this, because this is my hope for you, because you can do this right in your backyard. The idea that I came across after years, I've been a raw foodist for 13 years. You know, I've eaten only raw food. You know, I don't cheat on anything. It's just, this is what I eat. I've been doing that since I was 22 years old, 23 years old. You know, just how I am. In that experience of being a raw foodist and a vegetarian, I've kind of found out that really we're not really designed for fruits and vegetables. I mean, fruits and vegetables are good. They're the best ever. It's great. It's awesome. Everybody should eat them. But that's not what we're really designed for as our primary food. What we're really designed for as our primary food, and you can test this yourself, and I hope that you do, is we're really, as a noble being, as an ennoble incarnated being on this earth, you know, that's what all the books say we are, as noble incarnated spiritual being, we're really designed for the noble foods of the earth. And these foods are foods that are, you know, I love lettuce. Lettuce is great, but it's more than lettuce. And these foods we call the superfoods and the super herbs, the top herbs in the world, the top superfoods in the world. That's what we're designed for. And if you study Taoism or Ayurveda or any of the traditional systems of medicine, you're going to discover at the core of those the one simple truth, and that is get on the top 10 superfoods, get on the top 10 herbs, and try to get off everything else. That is the fundamental teaching that has become blatantly clear to me over the years of doing raw food. And you can start with that. If you're brand new, you've never heard of raw food or what I'm doing, if you just start taking in the top herbs in the world, whether it's ginseng, reishi mushrooms, schizandra berries, astragalus, nettles, pau d'arco, cat's claw, camu berry, or the top superfoods in the world like bee pollen, wild honey, spirulina, blue green algae, goji berries, and a whole litany and a whole list, which I don't want to get into right now, but I will answer and address questions on this if you want me to, absolutely, once I'm complete with the presentation.
You've just given a key for major longevity and peak performance.
What I just communicated to everybody who's listening on this call is so ridiculously powerful, it's not even funny. If you just hear it and take it on face value and begin applying it to your life, you'll see what I mean. All you've got to do is get on the top 10 superfoods as best you can that come from your area that you can get a hold of, and the top 10 herbs as best you can that come from your area that you can get a hold of, and you will find that over time, everything else drops away. Well, it turns out when you start looking at these things, and by the way, in the superfood category, I would include sea vegetables and seaweeds, especially kelp. What you're going to find is that kelp, seaweeds, goji berries, spirulina, blue-green algae, ginseng, reishi mushroom, you're going to find that these substances have a high polysaccharide fraction. And not only that, but you'll find if you look at goji berry, for example, you'll find that the Chinese have known about this, and that they've been extracting the polysaccharides out of goji berries for 100 years or longer and adding it to all their other medicines, all their other herbs, in order to enhance the effect of it. This is what David Hudson alluded to when he talked about the what was the name of that product? There's an aloe vera extract that's used for veterinary purposes, but obviously could be used for human purposes, but it's so powerful that it's never really talked about.
It's called Ace Manin.
Ace Manin, that's it. Thank you, Barry.
And he calls it mucopolysaccharides. Okay, we're getting interference from somebody.
We're getting a piano somewhere. Great. Anyway, so in the polysaccharide fraction, you're going to find that there's some reaction that occurs when you grow a plant that has a polysaccharide fraction in it. Let's say it's goji berry or aloe vera or noni. These are the ones that I've personally been growing. Or it could be reishi mushroom, which also I've been involved in growing, or it could be, you know, some of the other great foods that are out there, blue green algae, whatever. If you are able to grow those yourself and you are using ormus extracts, you're going to find that those types of plants react differently than the other types of plants. Now, I believe in my heart from experience with growing plants with ormus that all plants benefit from ormus. But some plants mine, like go in and mine or uptake or absorb the ormus elements more than other plants. And that is a huge concept right there. Some plants have more of this stuff in it than other plants. And those plants that have a natural affinity for ormus are the plants that we really should target to grow. And we can do that in our backyard, and we can do that using all the technologies that Barry's discovered and or brought to light, for example, the wet method, or you can use trap water, or you could use sodium burn method. And I've used all of those things and more, and I'm going to give you a list of everything that we've done on our farms and in my office and in my own little experiments in this regard. Well, anyway, you're going to find that those plants can be up, their power can be improved, and that you can do right now, today, you can start growing aloe vera with ormus and benefit immediately. And that's the purpose of our call, because when we get off this call, I'm hoping that each one of you has an action step that you're going to take out of this call, and you're going to go, okay, now I'm on this. I'm going to grow my plants this way in a different way than before.
So you've just described a whole bunch of the high ormus foods. Just when you were trotting them out, I'm going, bing that one, bing that one, bing that one. I mean, the high ormus food. I mean, yesterday I had, you know, a juice with fresh coconut and a whole bunch of cherries, which are both very high in ormus. And I love ormus. I know ormus loves a crystalline structure. It loves sugar and it loves salt. It feels safe in sugar and salt. And the whole polysaccharide deal is all about nature's different sugars. It's a crystalline structure that almost feels so comfortable in. And what you've described to me, buddy, are super almost foods. God, I'm so glad I got you on this call.
And I'll tell you what, here's what's crazy about it. In all my years in the field of ormus and also simultaneously in the field of nutrition, they actually meet in a very interesting place, and that is I do believe that our natural foods are the superfoods and that our natural medicines are the super herbs. And if we can get those superfoods and those herbs into our body with a high ormus content, well, we are onto something. We're really onto something. And from all angles, it appears to me that this is the direction where we need to go with farming. Because obviously, as we keep going towards more genetically modified whatever and more, you know, just unconscious behavior and pesticides and the whole thing, that on the other side of the equation, because everything in nature is balanced, there needs to be tremendous advances in farming of specific plants in order to balance out all that negativity and all that toxicity. And this is the direction that's been revealed to me as the way to go, right? Because you can do this in your backyard. You can grow a goji berry in your backyard. You can take dead sea salt extracts, throw it back there. You can make trap water, use trap water. I mean, there's all different kinds of ways you can go about this. We have developed in our laboratory a technique for taking ormus gold, making ormus gold, that I believe is unique. I haven't seen anybody else doing it this way. And we're using that. You could use the sodium burn method. It goes on and on. There's one method that I mentioned to Dennis the other day, which is of interest, and that is what we do is I live in a forest in Canada where there's so many medicinal mushrooms, it's the joke. I mean, birch, polypore, reishi, Fomus fomentarius, lion's mane, all different kinds of truffles. It's just what's it called? The cinnabar polypore. It just goes on endlessly. Ganoderma species of all kinds. We take those from the forest, especially from the sacred spots where we believe there's the most ormus present in the atmosphere and in the geosphere. We take those mushrooms and we bring them back to my house, and under a reduction reaction, which I learned from Dr. Patrick Flanagan, where you get a very hot fire going with birch bark, and then you shut off all the oxygen and you throw all the mushrooms in there and you burn the whole thing down without the fire being able to breathe, and that way you get very little oxidation. If the whole thing turns to ash over a period of a few hours, you take that ash and then you sprinkle that into the garden. And that's a way of also bringing some of these high-energy particles and trapping some of these high-energy particles out of the natural ecosystem or the forest and concentrating them into a certain area. Another way that we've been doing it is you take a plant that has a high ability to pull warmth in, you know, whatever, let's say it's aloe vera. And you take aloe vera and you grow, say, 10 plants on a volcanic soil and or noni on a volcanic soil. And then you would take all the parts, this is what we've been doing with noni, you take all the parts of the noni, all the leaves, everything else from the 9 plants of the 10, 9 out of 10 that have been going for a year, and you basically cut them up and you dice them up and throw them onto the 1 plant. Then you take another 9 plants the next year, grow them on another field, and you know, adjacent, in another direction maybe, so they're getting into the soil, especially in Hawaii where you have that volcanic soil with the ormus in it, and then they pull all the ormus in, especially into the fruits. You take those in, and you dice everything up. You take all the fruits, and you dump all the waste and all the compost, and everything goes on 1 plant, on 1 noni plant. And over a period of time, what we're seeing is that noni plant starts to behave very differently from a normal noni plant. The taste different. The leaves are different. The way it grows is different. The whole thing becomes different. And you see that what we're doing there is we're naturally allowing the other noni plants to mine the ormus out of the soil, and then we take them and we put them all on 1. All the noni fruits, we take all the compost and we put it all on 1. Is everybody following this idea?
Yes.
And that's another method that we've been using as well. And eventually the idea is that we have one small garden. I mean, it's about the size, I don't know, maybe it's 20 meters by 20 meters. It's not that big.
It's super concentrated agriculture, isn't it?
What was that, Dennis?
This is super concentrated agriculture.
Right, it's super concentrated agriculture. I've noticed, and you probably, people on this call have noticed this too, if you've ever eaten out of a garden or lived out of a garden or lived on wild food, which I like to do, you'd hardly need, I mean, you don't even really need a garden. I mean, the amount of food that I eat out of that garden, my garden's putting out too much food for me and my whole team, everybody who's living there. There's too much food. So, well, as long as we're going to grow something, let's just concentrate the heck out of our efforts, get the right plants in there, the ones that we know have this ability to hold a high ormus content or high polysaccharide fraction or high silica, right? And we'll just grow those, and we'll do it using all the methods available to increase the content of this stuff in the soil. Now, we're also taking, for example, rainwater. We're doing vore trapping of rainwater, and we're then spraying that on plants as well. So we're doing all kinds of things where we're kind of accelerating as much as possible from every angle the growth potential here. Now, let me just give you an example of one plant that I did in Hawaii. This is a durian tree. This was planted a couple years ago. And when the durian tree was put in the ground, it was put in the ground with ormus extracts done from ocean water using the wet method, the lye method, sodium hydroxide, that Barry describes on his website. And we put that in the hole when the plant got planted. And I planted it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to keep my eye on this one. When I went back 18 months later to have a good look at that plant, this wasn't at my house. This was on my farm. This was at a friend's place. It was the healthiest durian tree I'd ever seen. I mean, it was ridiculous. And that was from one application at the moment when the tree was planted. Which, you know, how could that have such a profound effect? And this is one of the mysteries about ormus. You know, I don't know exactly what the answer is, and Barry could probably give you a lot of ideas as to why this is. I mean, there's some kind of a getter phenomenon going that's the way I've seen it described, where it's either attracting more ormus to itself once you get it into a certain area, or it's a homeopathic catalyst that causes the plant to become more abundant, healthier, happier, more enlivened, et cetera, et cetera.
One thing that we think happens, David, is that the bacteria and the fungi in the soil are enlivened. And they, in turn, dissolve the nutrients that are already in the soil, including ormus nutrients, and pass them to the plant. So if you double, which is typical of the fungi, you double the fungi in a month, which is what happens when you put the ormus on, the seawater precipitate, then that really, really increases the ability of that fungi to pass nutrients on to the plant. And I think that may be part of what's going on.
I think you're right on with that, Barry. We have done a lot of experiments with growing mushrooms with ormus extracts, ocean water extracts, and just ocean water. And I want to just give you a little bit of a background on that. There's no question that the medicinal mushrooms, the tree mushrooms, like reishi mushroom, for example, or maitake, or coriolis, or the Fomus fomentarius, or some of these great mushrooms of the world, that they have a high affinity for these high-energy particles, and that may be the reason why they have such a powerful immune system. I want to say the educational element to them. And what I mean by that is the immune system is being educated by the medicinal mushrooms. If you've been a consumer of medicinal mushrooms over a long period of time, there does come a point where your immune system is completely different than it was before over a period of a few years. And there's some kind of a change in the immune system that is, I believe, permanent. In my experience, it's been permanent, where my immune system is so strong now that it is impossible for me to get sick under any circumstances ever, under any stress load, even if I'm staying up 3 or 4 days in a row without sleeping. And that's a fact. That's true. And I know it's because of that particular aspect of the mushroom that in the polysaccharides or the beta-1-3, beta-1-6 glucans, beta-1-4 glucans, that is the polysaccharide that's been identified as having this really strong immune system educational property. Well, we have been experimenting with growing mushrooms to try to up that beta-1-3 glucans or up the beta-1-6 glucans, and it's working. And in addition to that, I've been doing this with wild mushrooms, wild reishi mushrooms, exposing them to more ormus by spraying it on the dead logs. And these are wild mushrooms. These aren't, it's not log grown where I'm taking the log and impregnating it with the mushroom. These are logs that are in the forest that I've gone to and just doing this little experiment. But one little thing I want to mention is magic mushrooms. Now, I know nobody would do anything like that on this phone call. Of course not. That's illegal. However, it is possible to grow magic mushrooms with ormus, and the effects are profound. And the effect is this. It brings, like most of the other things we've noticed, it brings that particular plant or fungus to genetic perfection, to its genetically appropriate maximum. And that is something that it's just really hard to describe unless you've experienced it. It's when you have the mushrooms grown in that way, there is some effect that is completely unique in the world. And that's another application here. And then, so that led me to applying it to the other sacred plants, like San Pedro cactus, which is a very favorite of mine. I love San Pedro cactus. I have it all over my mom's house just because I think it's a poem that fits traditional shamanic usage. It's just a protector of the home. You have it around your house. Anyway, I've been growing San Pedro cactus ormus to moderate success. I don't know now if San Pedro cactus is real a high ormus uptaker or not, but those plants are very happy. They're very healthy, but they don't react like aloe vera does, that's for sure. And I want to just put that out there. Anyway, all of these things have kind of led to these farming projects, and the inevitable goal of these farming projects is to produce the most powerful foods ever in the history of the world. That's the idea. I mean, we got to be going for something new. Why not that? And we have an angle that's been gifted to us by Barry and David Hudson and others who've come before, like Steiner, like Schauberger, that's going to allow us to get to even better quality food, which we're going to need in order to survive in a world that is, you know, pretty much going toward depleted uranium consciousness, if you know what I mean by that. We're headed towards, like, chemtrail consciousness or something that's not other, that's other than the best ever. And how are we going to keep making it the best ever? Well, we're going to need better food. And if it's true that you are what you eat, man, we have tapped what you are what you eat means. We haven't even touched it. We are so far the true meaning of you are what you eat. But through these techniques and adding in the ormus-rich foods in this way, grown in this way, then we might begin to touch it. And that's been my goal, and that's the food I want to be able to supply to people and feed people on a mega scale. Okay. Having
that's
said all
vision,
of that,
buddy.
Gone, with that, Dennis?
That's a big vision.
It's a big vision. And I am an idealist, and I want to mention that. I am an idealist. You know, I want to know the answers. I want to know where we came from. I want to know what is the facts about chemistry and what are the mistakes in chemistry. I want to know what water is made out of. I don't want to be given an H2O molecule and told that water is H2O when it's not. You know, I assume that some of you on this call are like that as well. But I am an idealist, and I want a utopia. I mean, there was a great phrase that said, utopia is of utmost urgency. Utopia is a matter of utmost urgency. And I do believe that our destiny is in the stars. And in order to get out there, we can't have these trumped-up, nonsensical, you know, space programs and whatever that stuff is, which is all we need real industry, and we need real goals that are going to get us, you know, to push ourselves to the limit. And that's why I do the work I do, because I'm that kind of a person. I assumed that everybody else was too, but in my life I've found that no, people are not like that. People don't care or whatever, at least at some level. But I think people on this call do care. That if you're on this call right now, you do care. That you want a little bit of an insight or an advantage somewhere where you can make yourself healthier, make your family healthier, and develop your consciousness to a place where we can innovate, really develop ourselves as human beings on this earth that are here to contribute and give and create a beautiful planet. In fact, the best planet ever. And how are we going to get there? This, to me, is, in asking these questions over the years, this is what's come my way. Barry, Obama's thing, David Hudson's material, Steiner's material, and Schauberger, et cetera. At this point, I want to just digress into Schauberger and Steiner. And I want to talk a little bit about their work, because Steiner, to me, is very difficult to crack unless you understand how he understood the world. And Steiner understood the world as metaphors. So, for example, the sun is the exact same metaphor or octave as vitamin C, which is the exact same octave or metaphor as the center of your heart, your sacred heart, or the heart of inside your body, right, that pumps and keeps you alive. And is the exact same metaphor as Jesus, and is exactly on the same octave as chocolate. And all of those things actually, in Steiner's eye, are identical. They're the same thing. The sun, chocolate, Jesus is all the same thing. And that's the way he
chocolate.
Viewed the world. What was that, Dennis?
Holy chocolate!
See, I'm a huge chocolate. I mean, raw cacao. That's my favorite thing ever, which is the raw chocolate nut. Which grows in the bosom, in the heart of the jungle, and it has that energy of the sacred heart. Well, when we start looking at Ormus, we start understanding that, say, hey, Ormus gold and Ormus silver and Ormus copper, these are energetic metaphors of very high states of purity, of very high states of consciousness. And not only that, they're states of consciousness that they're kind of like radio stations. You kind of tune into that, and there's tons of material inside that frequency, just like a radio station. You know, you're going to get 100 songs in a day or whatever it is, right? So there's lots of information in that frequency when you tune into that, and they're programmable. Each frequency is programmable. You could say, hey, look, you know, let's have the best ever. Let's have the, you know, the most fun ever, and you program that right into that octave, the Ormus octave, and boom, it shows up in all its different metaphors. Steiner was a master of understanding that, because he never understood the world any other way. He was born that way. And he couldn't understand how everybody else's consciousness worked until he was in his 20s. He didn't realize, whoa, people don't see things like I do. And that's when he realized, whoa, he could be, you know, a contributor to the world. And that's how he was able to understand the whole biodynamic farming and the homeopathic effects of crystals and nettle juice and all that other stuff. And I want to mention Schauberger, too, because to me, Schauberger, if you understand Schauberger, you are in a place to create a paradise on Earth. Schauberger's work, it was seminal. It was pretty much, I believe, the most important work ever on water in the whole history of the world, at least that we know, at least since Atlantean times. And he understood Ormus, actually, in water, as he called it Kohlenstoff. And Kohlenstoff, it means carbon, but he would use a little dash in between it to denote a different form of carbon, or what was translated into the English language as carbone in the Callum Coates editions of the Victor Schauberger books. Now, carbone, as Victor Schauberger understood it, wood, this is a critical, critical point about Ormus. So critical, it's a joke, and I believe it's one of the biggest discoveries about Ormus ever, and that is Ormus reacts to centripetal action or vortex action. And the more vortex action that the Ormus molecules undergo, very likely the greater is the Meissner field, the greater is the ability of that particular molecule to get into your biology and actually affect you biologically. And centripetal action is vortex action, just to be real clear on that. And Victor Schauberger understood that when you start vortexing things, there's some anomalous stuff that occurs. And in my understanding of how it all works, I believe, this is where I've come to believe from Schauberger's work, cross-referencing it across all the Ormus data and against Steiner's work and even Wilhelm Reich's work, is that Ormus is in the earth. It comes from out of the earth. And its goal is to get to the center of the sun. And there are elements that come from the sun whose goal is to get to the center of the earth. And where they meet, that's the biosphere. That's life. And there, the element that comes with the Ormus is hydrogen that comes out of the earth, and it's met on coming from the sun is ozone. That's the most male element, and most female element, of course, is the Ormus. And the hydrogen is like the child. And if you get that or understand that, you're going to see that actually all life is a mating of these things, these energies. The ozone and the bions and the oxygen that comes from the upper atmosphere coming down from the sun, pressing downwards, and the elements coming out of the earth that are falling upwards, which is the Ormus element. And under centripetal action or vortex action, Ormus becomes active and is able to actually levitate or rise up.
Magnetism. Something in here, David.
What was that, Barry?
I'd like to add something in here. One thing that has recently been claimed by some scientists in New York is that spin, this vortex action, spin coherence is the mind pixel. That is the quantum coherent communication system in the brain. They claim that when you have a bunch of spin coherent atoms or molecules or something in the brain or in the body, that's how consciousness happens.
I find that so interesting, Barry, because why did those scientists, those quantum physicists, use the word spin, right? The word spin denotes that vortex action or orbital, right, which is a vortex spiral action. And if you look at the whole Milky Way galaxy, it's all, you know, our whole galaxy is just giant. It's basically a giant sink. Everything's kind of spinning down into the black hole at the very center of the galaxy. And this particular action, the vortex action, I want to add that in my opinion, it's exactly the opposite of a plasma reaction or a fire. So if you were to vortex water, that's a formative that creates organization, entropy. And on the other side, entropy is created by a plasma reaction or actually a fire. And if anybody knows that, hey, if you burn a log, that log's changed. Molecularly, the atoms have been changed, right? I mean, everybody, that's kind of, you know, basic science. But on the other side, we've got, when you take water, you change it equally as much, except you don't see it like the way you would see when you burn a log. And plants are doing this all the time. They're, if you go and touch a tree, it's not hot. I mean, how come it's not hot? It's running sap up and down that tree all day long. Why isn't there any friction? I mean, why is it you touch a tree, it's cool? And the reason is because it's using vortex action, and it's using vortex patterns or spiral patterns in the bark. In fact, trees construct bark with spiral patterns in them so that the Ormus elements and the hydrogen naturally fall upward as they matriculate through those tubules up into the leaves of the plant or the tree. Does that make sense?
Think so.
And here's another way of saying it. There's a whole bunch of stuff that wants to fall upwards, but it can't fall upwards. It just can't fall straight up. It has to have a pathway shown to it that is actually spiral or in the Fibonacci sequence, like the tubules in bark. And what will happen is if there's a fluid at the bottom of a tree and it can see tubules that are spiraling going upwards in the Fibonacci sequence, that liquid or moisture will literally fall upwards into the tree and will raise the sap of the tree. And that particular piece of it, the falling upwards, not fighting gravity, I believe is really critical to understand, because Ormus is more functional, is more capable of acting at a certain anomalous temperature that's a lower temperature, not hot. It's a cooler temperature.
Wow.
So, Barry, you talk about fractionally freezing water to concentrate the Ormus, right? Because the Ormus water is the last water to freeze. Is that correct?
It seems to be, yeah.
When we've done that, I've done that, Barry, with maple sap, fractionally frozen maple sap, and just continually fractionally frozen it. And what
uh-huh.
you find is, and this gets back to the sugar issue, what you find is that as you fractionally freeze maple sap, the sugars concentrate.
Uh-huh.
And so this is indicating that's probably the Ormus that's in all sap, that's in all blood, it's in all, you know, it's in all chlorophyll, in the sap of the tree, that Ormus is concentrating and holding itself inside the sugar molecules. And by the way, if you're wondering how to make maple syrup raw, there is a way to do it through fractional freezing. We did it for the first time last year without cooking
wow.
the maple without cooking the maple sap.
Great idea. You know,
so that's
maple is a high Ormus food.
I'm sorry, Dennis, what was that?
And maple is a really high Ormus food.
Right, sure, it's a tree sap. And it actually, you know, all as Barry knows, and you guys know, all water contains Ormus. It's part of what water is. But sap, in particular, have a high content of it. And with maple sap and birch sap, we have a real opportunity to get at this stuff in its natural state in a highly bioavailable form. And if you fractionally freeze it, you really get it, and it really tastes good, too. I mean, that stuff is awesome.
Along the same line.
Some of the stuff we've been doing as well.
Along the same line, there's some experiments that have been done with these real steep pyramids in Russia. And they found that water that's kept in those pyramids, even though the temperature may be way below freezing, it doesn't freeze. And you remember the vortex that comes out of the pyramid, according to some info on Patrick Flanagan's some of his. He did a photo of a Kirlian photo of a pyramid grid, and also there's a pyramid that's been photographed by a doctor in Montana using Kirlian photography. And that vortex coming out of the pyramid, that seems to be that vortex energy again. And I'm wondering if that isn't related to why the water doesn't freeze. It's perhaps energizing the Ormus in the water and keeping it from freezing.
I think it has something to do with it, Barry. Just to add a little bit of info onto that, to the pyramids in Russia, there are what are called phi ratio pyramids, and that has to do with the angle of the pyramid and that the whole volume of the pyramid is in the phi ratio or in the Fibonacci sequence. And, of course, the most common and the one that we all know is the 58.2, I believe, is that's the Great Pyramid of Cheops. That's a phi ratio angle. There's if you go below that, you're going to go to 36-degree angle, which is the pyramids of Mexico, of Teotihuacan. And if you go down below that, the next octave down on the Fibonacci sequence in terms of pyramid angles is a 23.5-degree pyramid. Now, if you look for 23.5, you'll notice something about it. Does anybody recognize something about 23.5 degrees of angle? It's the angle of the Earth, right?
Yeah.
The Earth is tilted 23.5 degrees, which is not an accident. It's a phi ratio angle. And then also on the upper side with the Russian pyramids, they're using 72-degree pyramids, and they're getting these anomalous things happening in those pyramids, and that's what Barry's talking about. strangely enough, one night I was playing with the phi ratios of all the different pyramids, and I, like a week, I was at Dr. Flanagan's house, Dr. Patrick Flanagan, who you may be aware of, and he's doing the exact same thing on a piece of paper at his house. I couldn't, Patrick, what is this? And it was almost the exact thing that I had drawn, and he was saying, oh, I'm just playing with ratio pyramids. I was like, this is so synchronistic. It's ridiculous. Anyway, we had a great talk about the phi ratio, and obviously Patrick and most people in this field are very strongly onto this whole idea of sacred geometry and the phi ratio, and that the spiral patterns that create the implosion or the levitation of Ormus atoms and water and hydrogen have to fall into that phi ratio, because the phi ratio, it's like this. The phi ratio, it's like the string theory. If you push your rocket straight through space,
produced an echo. If it just came on, just change something on that call. Please change back, because we're getting echoes throughout the whole call.
I think they just did. Well, good.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, good. Let me get on to this falling upwards thing and why bark appears the way that it does with the tubules constructed the way they are, and why your bloodstream and your system is constructed in spirals and that along the phi ratio. It's kind of, if you try to push, for example, a rocket down a straight pathway across space, you're going to be met with resistance. Or in the string theory, there's a net that's sitting on the other side that as the rocket hits the net, the net will eventually stop the rocket due to friction. That's the whole idea of friction, actually. Anything you push through space, there's going to be some resistance. But there is a way to move substance through space with no friction. And Mother Nature uses this technique to put sap up into the top of trees, drop it back down again, et cetera, and move water around the planet. And that technique is spiral action through the Fibonacci sequence of spirals. And the Fibonacci sequence describes a certain spiral form, which is what you see on the side of a snail. And that particular sequence, if you move an object through that through a spiral action through space, you'll notice that the friction starts to drop away or disappear. Here's how I've noted it just with my tea maker at home. If I make a tea and I'm pouring the tea through a strainer, and the strainer backs up, if I start trying to push or, you know, plunge water through the tea, through all the debris that's in the strainer to try to get it in the cup underneath, it's going to splash and slosh everywhere. But if I move my finger spirally around the strainer in the liquid and the substance that's clogging it up, the liquid goes right through almost instantaneously. Has anyone ever done that at home? You'll find that if anything ever clogs, what was that, Barry?
They make toilets that way.
Right. If anything's ever clogged, the spiral action is more capable of unclogging it than using a direct forceful push. That's the idea that I'm saying here. And this is all, and people say, well, how is this related to Ormus? It's because Ormus is activated when it's moved through spiral action. This is one of the reasons why Barry and I both agree that the best way to get Ormus is in plants. Because the plant has run that substance through spiral action through all the tubules inside itself. And then you take that in, it's bioavailable. Your body goes, yep, know what to do with this, easy, no problem. And therefore, that led me personally in my research to go towards, okay, how do we get as much Ormus as possible into which plants? And those plants turned out to be the superfoods and the super herbs, which apparently are showing up and turning out to be the foods that have the most Ormus in them, or the most capability of holding Ormus elements inside themselves. Okay, I've probably babbled on long enough about this.
And that
I'd
Ormus
love
would
to
also
be able to open it up to questions.
Just a second. That Ormus would also be most coherent as well.
Like spin coherent?
Spin coherent, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go on to questions, let's announce the winners for the how many raffle prizes are there?
Three.
Okay. The winners for the raffle are call that. First winner.
I don't think Colette is on today.
Second winner.
I am.
Fantastic.
David.
Way to go, darling.
Thank you.
And the second winner is.
David Steinberg. And the third winner is James Leong.
Would you say that name again, please?
James Leong.
How do you spell that last name? L-Y-O-N?
L-E-O-N-G.
L-E-O-N-G. Leong. Right. Fantastic. All right, James. You'll be getting it. Now, listen, you need to email me at expand@ozimail.com.au and give me your address and I'll send it out to you. Now, listen, it's time we took some questions because I know you guys are going to be bursting at the seams to ask questions, and I want to, before you guys get into it, because I'd like David to describe his fractional freezing process for me, because I discovered this. I think I discovered this myself, David. What I did accidentally is I accidentally partially froze some coconuts in my fridge. The fridge was just too cold. And what I discovered was that as I was drinking this coconut juice, it's extremely sweet when it's partially frozen, because all the high almost sweetness doesn't freeze. And it's just the most delicious stuff you could, I've ever had out of a coconut. Is that what partially freezing is? Is that what your fractional freezing is?
That's right, Dennis. What we've been doing during the season, actually it's the end of March, beginning of April, when the maple syrup season is, and also the birch sap season. The reason why the season is that time of the year is because you start moving out of the below freezing and start moving into the melting zone. And so during the day, things will melt, and then back in the night, they'll freeze again. Then they'll melt again in the day, and they'll freeze again. That's the sap season. Well, it's really easy to fractionally freeze because what we do is during the day, at the end of the day, we go collect all the maple water, all the maple sap from all our traps all around all our trees. We did 14 trees last year. I mean, that was you can't even remember what you did. 14 trees. Unbelievable. Anyway, so
can we
literally...
That, please, David?
What was that, Barry?
Somebody scraped and we missed a little bit of that. Anytime somebody
okay,
scrapes...
Okay, I'll back
noise,
up. I have about 40 maple syrup or maple sap traps, you know, where you can tap the tree. Every year my goal is to put all 40 out, but once we get to about 14, I think we did 14 this year, it's so much that you can't even, I mean, a group of 5-6 people can't even consume it all. And so what we do is at the end of the day, before it gets cold again and freezes, what we'll do is we'll go collect all the maple water and we'll put them into what are those things called? Polycarbonate, the giant plastic 5-gallon containers or 2.5-gallon containers, and we'll fill them up and we'll leave them outside into the evening for a couple hours. And what will happen is they will fractionally freeze, meaning that half of it will freeze. We'll pour off the sweet water, which is the stuff that doesn't freeze, and we'll take it inside and we'll leave it in the refrigerator. And then the next day, we'll do it again. So we'll fractionally freeze it 2 or 3 times on each batch. And what will happen is you start separating and concentrating the sweet water off of everything else. And not only that, you really start feeling like this is where the magic is. Because when you have the other stuff, the frozen stuff, that doesn't have the sweet, probably doesn't have the ormus in it, you know, your body doesn't react to it quite the same as the sweet stuff. Anyway, after 2 or 3 fractional freezings on each batch, you got a beverage that tastes so ridiculously good, it's not even funny, and it will keep, because then you can take all that, put the whole thing, put it in the refrigerator, and you can just keep that going for weeks.
Wow.
And anybody can do it. You can do it with birch sap, too. And, again, you don't need any technology because the time of the year does it for you. Because that time of the year, again, at night you're going to have a freeze, but in the day things melt. And so, therefore, at the end of the day, you just go collect all your sap, you put it into a polycarbonate container, 5 gallon or 2.5 gallon, and you leave it outside into the evening until just the point where, you know, 3/4 of it has frozen. Then you pour off the sweet water, you save it for the next day, and you do another fractional freezing again, and then you do it again the next day, another fractional freezing. Now, we've got batches of that going every single day because, you know, some batches are on their third or fourth fractional freezing, some are on their first.
Phenomenal. Thank you for that, buddy. And listen, I'd like to open the lines for people to ask questions to David. And before you pipe up, just hit *7 to activate your, so we can hear you, yeah? Otherwise, you're going to be talking to a vacuum. So hit *7 if you want to speak to David. If you want to ask a question, do that now. We'll take the first question now.
I heard something about superfoods and something about acquiring something. Your voice was very muffled. Could you speak up a little bit? Yeah, I do, actually.
Would you repeat the question, David? Because
I
couldn't hear
the question.
It.
So this gentleman asked, do I have a list of these things anywhere so that you guys can go and check it all out? It's probably not complete, but there's two places. One of them is on sunfood.com, which is my website. If you go to sunfood.com and click on articles by me, there's an article called Superfoods 101. If you open Superfoods 101 up, you're going to see that list in that article, and that's at sunfood.com. There's another list that I put together that's going to be in a book that is going, now it's into its second edition. It's going to be picked up by Random House, Barry, which is kind of cool. Barry helped me with this book, on the Ormus section of this book, and that book is called Amazing Grace, and the second edition will be released on February 1st, 2008, and in that book we've taken a complete list. It's not a complete list. It's the best list that I feel comfortable standing behind to date based on the scientific understandings that we have right now. Certainly it's not complete, but it's as good as we can right now to the ballpark. So that's in the Ormus chapter in the book Amazing Grace. We're near North Bay. So the question was, where is my Ontario farm located? We're near North Bay. We're on the 46th parallel. And if you're familiar with Ontario, there's several different ecosystems. There's Southern Ontario, which is the escarpment that goes all the way down to, for example, there was a woman on the call from London, Ontario, you know, and the Niagara Escarpment and Toronto and all of those areas. And then after you get a little bit north of Barrie, you start getting into the Canadian Shield lands, and that's my favorite geological formation in the world. That's why I have a place there. I just love that particular land formation, the rock formation there. And the shield lands continue up, you just keep going north. But there's a certain region just east of the Great Lakes that is called Central Ontario, and I love that ecosystem, so I'm in that ecosystem there. And if you go north from there into Northern Ontario, you're going to get into the boreal forest, and that's an amazing place as well. But a little bit more difficult to run kind of a farming operation and just, you know, be able to get there easily.
What kind of ormus have you found local to that area? Trap water or any water from salt water, from any salt areas in that area, anything like that?
Great question, Barry. Here's what we've done. And this is something I hope, and my prayer is that everybody gets to do this and has the opportunity to do this. The reason why I bought that particular property is because it does actually have a spring on it. It's not a well. It's not an artesian well. It's a real spring that has been tapped. Basically, where there was a spring area, they opened up the ground, pushed back some walls, and then that pool fills up every single day with water. And then we tap into that with a pump that brings the water all the way into the house. That's our ormus source. We vor trap that water, and it is absolutely, it's ridiculous. I mean, when you vor trap that water, what comes out is a 10 part per million spring water that's been spiralized in the pipe twice. Let me just reiterate how we do this. There's a pool that's been opened up out of the ground. It's a natural spring. Years ago, when they put the place in, they put a building on top of that. The water fills that pool up and then spills over. That spill off that runs down the hill, even at minus 40, when it's minus 40 out, never freezes. It's always running. It will never freeze because the water is specifically dense, as Victor Schauberger described. When the when we put the pump in, I put the actual pickup unit goes in at about halfway down into the pool. The pool's probably 8 feet deep, so it's about 4 feet down. That pump pulls it through a pump. That pump sends it through a spiral pipe. It's a copper pipe with a spiral inside the pipe. These are available on, I think you have to get them out of Vancouver. I got them from my friend Vance, who from the Best Food Ever, Vance at thebestfoodever.com. Him and I actually put the pipes in. It goes through the spiral, and then it comes out, goes into the ground through a meandering pipe, so it's not in a straight line, and it goes all, it's a meandering, like it's some kind of a rubber of some sort. And then it goes up to the house, and then it goes through another spiral pipe, and then it goes into the house, and then at each outlet of the house is another spiral pipe, so it's triple spiraled, and then we would attach, say, Vortraps onto that, and then we're taking that water and we're using it for various uses like drinking or watering the plants with it or whatever. Because we're not near a salt source, we're not near a salt marsh or anything like that or any near the ocean, this has been probably the best.
Really? What do you notice from drinking it?
Barry, here's what I've noticed. What we like to do, actually, is only basically do beverages when we're there because the water is so good, and it's out of the tap. It's better than anything. I mean, it's ridiculous. I have people come over to my house, and they're like, what is going on over here? What's going on with the water? Because when you drink that water, you get such a charge through every cell of your body. You get hydrated for the first time in your life, I believe. I mean, I don't believe that almost anybody's really hydrated unless you're drinking fresh spring water at the source, like, you know, the Himalayan yogis or something, every day. And by the way, we have that opportunity, and that's why I'm putting it out there because, you know, nobody's in a vacuum. You have the ability to manifest that for yourself. I chose that house for that reason, bought it for that reason. We had to redo the entire water pumping system, piping system, the whole thing, and it was a mess. It took 2 years. We finally got it right, and it's perfect, and it's absolutely it's the best ever. I mean, I can't when I'm not there, I carry vials of the water around with me in my backpack just to have the vibration around me.
And remember, the first part of the word hydrated is high.
I like that. And it's also, you know, another thing is hydrogen. Right, because hydration means hydrogen, and the more hydrogen that you have in the water, it's more likely that you have ormus present, because ormus and hydrogen are related to each other, and hydrogen is going to mean that your water is going to be slightly acidic, and so spring water is slightly acidic if you measure it with a pH strip, and this is a big misconception that's out there, that alkaline water, like at the source, is better for you than acidic water at the source. That's not true. Spring water, you'll find all mountain spring water is going to come in either at a 7, a 6.8, all the way even down to a 5.8.
Mine is a 6.2.
There you go.
Okay, I want to take
and that's
one question,
good for you.
One more question from the free room, and then we're going to cut it off.
Okay, I heard about the 100-to-1 concentrate of ocean water. What was the second part that has a lot of ormus that you asked about? Okay, I think I understand this gentleman's question. I could be wrong, so if I'm wrong, please correct me. But I believe what you're asking is, if you have these ocean water concentrates where the sodium has been removed, is the ormus still present? And the answer is, yes, it appears that it is still present. There is a guy down in Australia, I was talking to Dennis about this actually, who he's fractionally getting the sodium out of the ocean water. I'm not sure exactly what he's doing. He's using pools and sunlight, and it's all natural that he's not using any chemistry. And he's removing 93% of the sodium from ocean water, and then he's selling that concentrate. And we actually use that concentrate in several of our products as a preservative. That particular concentrate, I've done a wet method extraction on it, is so darn rich in either magnesium hydroxide, calcium hydroxide, and or ormus, it's not even funny. I mean, it's ridiculous. That's probably the best source of ormus I've ever seen is his particular it's called GrowPal. The way it's sold in Canada is as GrowPal, and I don't know exactly what the name of it is down in Australia. You know what? Actually, I might.
You're awesome.
I do, actually. It's called Sea Minerals Dietary Supplement. Let me see if I can give you this guy. It's a product of Queensland. Seamineral.com. Seamineral.com. Check him out.
There's another one called Aussie.
But I want to mention that if you do the wet method, that if the substance is sitting for a while, it does seem to lose some potency. It always seems to me that the quicker you use it, the better it is. Have you found that true to be true, Barry?
And awesome. The test that Arthur's done with his sea crop indicates that having it around for a long time doesn't seem to diminish in its effectiveness for plants.
Okay,
that's
good information.
Almost loves the crystalline structure, so if it's in salt or sugar, it stays stable. And salt seems to preserve it the best for the longest.
I think you're right about that. And let me just tell you something that has happened to me. We did a sodium burn method on gold one time a number of years ago, and I put it in a wood container. I just put the final product that was produced in a few different containers to see what would happen. And the gold powder that we got, you know, it was left over, that it had actually migrated up to the top of this wooden container and was actually escaping out of it. So I got probably from Barry and from David Hudson that these things can escape, but I have actually seen that in my own research. I mean, that actually happened to me. So I want to just corroborate that is true. This stuff, if it's not bound in by salt or a crystalline structure, we'll try to escape.
Oh, boy, I hope you took lots of pictures.
I should take some pictures of it, actually.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, you know, I one time, Barry, you know this aloe plant that I was talking about?
Mm-hmm.
One time I tried to take a picture of it because everyone was telling me, you know, take a picture of it, put it on the internet. You know, you keep talking about this plant. Just take a picture of it. I went down to go take a picture of it that day. It was on a Saturday, and everybody in my office knows, this is my old office where I used to have 100 plants in the front office. Everybody knows not to touch my plants ever because, you know, scientific experiments going on. I just don't want anybody touching anything, doing anything to them. Well, Sarah, one of the women who works for me, she had actually moved the aloe vera plant and just done this whole thing. I'm like, Sarah, what in the world? What are you doing? And she said, when I walked in this morning, I had this urge, like the plant was telling me to move it. And so I don't know. What I got from it is that I wasn't supposed to take a picture of it, so I didn't. And so I'm hesitant to take pictures of, you know, Orma stuff. However, I still do it and have gotten some pretty good pictures that are all – actually, one of my websites is thebestdayever.com that I run with Len Foley. And Barry, you know Len pretty well. The Best Day Ever is like a members site where we, you know, take people through every aspect and nuance of nutrition and everything, and then we post a bunch of pictures. Now, you can see those pictures because you don't have to be a member. You can go to thebestdayever.com, see all the pictures without being a member, and I recommend that you do that because we're putting up a whole Ormus picture site on that website.
And you can also
Ormus picture section.
Also, Google David Wolf and The Best Day Ever on videos and get a lot of videos.
Cool. Okay, hey, do we have any other questions out there?
Oh, I have a question about your Ormus Gold product.
Uh-huh.
Yes, you use silica in there. I was wondering, do you use that organo living silica? Is that what the base, like the substrate is that the Ormus is in?
No, we don't actually. What Ribald is doing, let me just rephrase the question. The question was, I produce an Ormus Gold product, and it's a system that we figured out just by kind of trial and error and playing around with this stuff for all these years, and it's pretty clever, and it's not out there actually. Barry doesn't have that technique up on his site, and the silica that we use is not organic silica, which is I believe must have a high Ormus content in it, although I've never tested organo myself. Organo is a product that was developed by Ribaud. Ribaud, I believe he's a Frenchman, and he was basically crucified by the World Medical Mafia because his product, Organo Living Silica, is one of the most powerful healing substances for rheumatoid arthritis known to human, most powerful. It's on par with DMSO and any other thing like that. Anyway, we use a different silica, we use a different technique, and we only have three ingredients that are in the final product, which is distilled water, silica, and Ormus Gold. The fraction of Ormus Gold that's in there, by the way, is 1.4% of the total dissolved solid. So when you see on the internet, I just want to mention this, when you see on the internet these products that have, for example, I don't know, like, you know, they say 99% pure white gold, and you see this white fluffy powder in there, that white fluffy powder most of the time is just silicic acid. It's not Ormus. The amount of Ormus that's present is probably only about 1% or less. In fact, in most of the cases, most of the ones we've tested, it's 0.1% or less. Our product is 1.4% tested.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Now, if there's any other questions, please tell us who you are. Before you ask your question, you know, simple net politeness. And come on, I want the next question, please. Speak up.
Stunned silence.
You may have to unmute yourself to ask a question. I just dropped the free room, by the way.
Okay. So hit star 7 and speak up. Ask your question.
Where can I get a goji berry tree?
Where can you get a goji berry tree?
Or a bush.
Or a bush. One of the things you can do is you can take any goji berry that you buy and you can plant them, because most of them that are out in the market are raw. And you can just plant the seeds. There's about 30 seeds in each goji berry. You can also go online, and there are websites that sell small goji berry bushes. And you can order one on the web. And there's a place in Utah that's shipping them out all over the country now. So if you're in the U.S., you could get one pretty easily. I was in Hawaii. This is so fascinating. The goji berry bushes from Arizona, the wild goji berry, I'm a goji berry hunter. I mean, that's one of my favorite pastimes is actually hunting down wild goji berries. In America, there are 15 species in America, 85 in Asia. And of the 15 species in America, Lyceum burlandieri is probably the best. It's the most common. And it grows in the Arizona desert. And I was in Kauai and at our farm out there, and lo and behold, I was buying some fruit trees, and they had a Lyceum burlandieri goji berry bush from Arizona, and it grows in Hawaii, and it grows well. So these things have tremendous variability of growing environments that they can survive in, and that's the point I wanted to make, is this stuff, goji berry is really hardy plant.
This is
Savannah. Yes, I can.
I'd like you to just go back a little bit to the rheumatoid arthritis situation, Organa. Where can I learn more about that for a patient who has severe rheumatoid arthritis and is even wanting to commit suicide? He's in so much pain. So what can we do for him?
Oh, there's so much that can be done. And please tell him to – he can contact my assistant, Goji Girl, G-O-J-I-G-I-R-L, at sunfood.com. And we have a whole protocol for rheumatoid arthritis called the Super Immune Tonic System that please have him email, or you can email Goji Girl and get that. It's a free document that we send out to people. And basically what it does, it gets to the root cause of what rheumatoid arthritis really is. And actually one of the main things that it is an Ormus deficiency. I basically have concluded from my research and from my understanding in the field of Ormus and experiences and anecdotal reports that Ormus does have an affinity for the joints and the cartilage. And there was the guy who's actually manufacturing our Ormus Gold now, he was a rheumatoid arthritis case, and he had it in his back, and he couldn't do it. He was completely paralyzed. I mean, he couldn't walk for 3 days at times. And he's completely cured. He was completely cured by Ormus Gold only. Just put that out there. So I do believe strongly now that an Ormus deficiency is related to rheumatoid arthritis, or at least the susceptibility to it. Rheumatoid arthritis is a combination of two things. It's a nanobacteria infection, which is a calcification organism, like a microscopic oyster that forms shells around itself and gets into the joint tissues and causes all kinds of, and it's that in combination with viruses. And when you get those two together, then you have the ground, especially with an Ormus deficiency at the joint level and a sulfur deficiency and some other deficiencies in the material that the joints are made out of and the juiciness of the joint, then you're going to get into trouble. Aloe vera is really powerful. There's so many things that this guy could be doing. Organo Living Silica, if you get onto sunfood.com and you just punch in O-R-G-O-N-O, you can read about the history of the product. Also, Nexus Magazine did a huge article on
Rabode and Living Silica and his discovery that you can find online, and I recommend that you search that out.
Now, remember that David Hudson said that Ormus would masquerade as iron, silica, and aluminum. So we think that sometimes what is thought to be silica really isn't silica, but rather is Ormus. Another thing
I completely agree with Barry on that, by the way. I completely agree. I think that's true.
So you spell this O-R-G-O-N-O?
That's right. That's the name of the product, O-R-G-O-N-O, Living Silica, Organo Living Silica. It's probably really has a huge amount of Ormus in the product. That's probably what the deal is. The website is sunfood.com.
Sunfood.
Which is my website.
Great. Thank you so much, David. And I will – it's gojigirl@sunfood.com.
That's right.
Does she have a phone number?
G-O-J-I. What was that?
Does she have a
phone
number?
Yeah, the phone number is 619-219-0727. 619-219-0727. And specifically ask for what's called the SITS program, like sit down.
Mm-hmm.
Super Immune Tonic System. That's the acronym, SITS, S-I-T-S.
Thank you so much.
And if there's any visible evidence of the arthritis,
it's just soreness and pain. He just had a surgery, and after the surgery, it just got really, really bad.
Well, invisible evidence, take before pictures, and take them quickly.
Oh, I see, so that we can get some documentation. That's a good idea. I don't know if we can see anything, but I will...
One woman had rheumatoid arthritis in her hands, and I arranged for her to get some Ormus from a local provider, and she couldn't close her hands, and she couldn't completely open them, and her fingers were so swollen that she couldn't even put her fingers together. And
did she also have the joint deformation where this is called
exactly,
the swan?
Exactly.
The swan thumb, yeah.
And so I said, take some pictures, and I'll get you some product. And I went down to see her, I think it was 2 weeks later. And I said, and she was the first person I saw. I said, can I take a picture of your hands? And she said, sure. She held her hands up, and her fingers were straight. And she completely straightened her hands, and they even
wow.
Backward a little bit. And it was just amazing. And I said, Could I have the pictures that you took before? And she said, I just didn't think it had happened this quick.
That's wonderful. Well, this is...
So I don't have any before pictures, just after pictures.
Okay, but this is going to be very... hopefully they'll do this. And they're older people, but they are very conscious about their diet. At least the wife is, so she can really get on this and get him the right foods and Ormus products. David, is there an Ormus product in this program that you sell, or is it just a sort of advice and then you follow the advice?
It's basically it's a four-step program, and it includes a huge array of really rich Ormus products. For example, reishi mushroom, cat's claw, a whole host of extracts of different herbs, and I couldn't really describe it to you in any brevity.
But is it all available? Like, for instance, would the mushroom extracts be available? As a Chinese practitioner, I can get a lot of this stuff through dragon herbs, but it's not Ormus.
Yeah.
It's not Ormus.
All the resources are all listed there with websites how to get it all.
Okay. That was my question.
It's very simple to follow. And
wonderful. Thank you so much.
The discovery is a very interesting discovery, and it was made about 25 years ago, and that is the discovery of nanobacteria, which are virus-sized organisms that produce shells or calcium shells, and they form the bad calcium, and that's what creates the deformation of the joint. And if you empower your immune system to be able to destroy those organisms, the actually you take out that coral reefing, because those things keep growing on top of each other and they form a coral reef inside your joint.
Wow.
And if your immune system can get that stuff out, and it can, given the right tools, then the joint will actually correct itself. And that's why, you know, you can see something like what Barry was saying, the joint actually gets back to normal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know Ormus can do that because I saw the photographs of Tut's tail. And that's one of the first things that completely blew me away about Ormus. And have you seen Tut's tail?
Yes, I have.
So that, to me, that's one of the most incredible proofs, testaments to the power of Ormus. And it goes back to Rudolf Steiner. You spoke about his metaphorical understanding of the world, but he understands life in terms of, you know, the etheric dimension and the astral planes. So that, you know, really, to me, my understanding, how I connect Ormus with Steiner, because I used to teach all that and study all that, you know, Waldorf stuff, is that the there is the Ketheric level of our energy field, which is the gold template. And that gold template is the blueprint of perfection. It already exists in our energy field. To me, Ormus is vibrating at that level. And so as we take Ormus, it's vibrating, it's activating the gold Ketheric template. It's within every cell, but it's we're not aligned with it. Most of us are in what we would call, you know, negative spin state or out of alignment with it. And Ormus brings us back so that our cells can actually tune to that golden level or Ketheric template. And so I was excited. I perked up again when you mentioned Steiner, because to me he was really a pioneer in tying all this together. He talked about copper a lot and metals. Now I want to go back and reread Steiner's book on minerals to see if I can link it to, you know, these Ormus theories. But a lot of the medicines that he prescribed were just little traces of metal. And I wonder if, what?
I'm just wondering if I might ask a question to our entire group of how many people on this call have actually used Ormus homeopathically and have used it to some significant benefit homeopathically, because I think most of us have probably played with these Ormus products, and I've found that the homeopathic Ormus, you know, if you use a bottle up, for example, and then there's a little bit left at the bottom, and you dilute it, and you use it again, and then when that's almost done, you use it again, that there is a very powerful effect from using Ormus homeopathically. Are we reasonably all in agreement that that's true?
I haven't done it, but I've thought about it. It makes total sense.
It's sort of one of the first things that I did when I got a little bottle from White Powder Gold in Tennessee a couple of years ago, and there was so little of it, and I paid so much relatively for it, I went, I've got to be able to stretch this. So I made an essence of it. I put 7 drops in it into a bit of brandy and some water, and I percussed it 49 times with an intention, and then I measured its LOC, or level of consciousness, by dousing, and it had around about 25% of the LOC, or the level of consciousness, of the original product. Then I found another way to do it, and I had exactly the same LOC of the original product, but it wasn't in the powdery liquid form. It just held the vibration. It held the level of consciousness of the original product. And I was and a friend of mine who actually introduced me to Ormus she taught me how to make a wet method on my balcony, Dr. Jen, now actually sells a product to her friends called Essence of Eternal Youth, which is basically the same methodology that I taught her. And so we're in exchange. She taught me, I taught her, and she's made it a commercial product. And the way she did that is she started, whenever she was out partying or something like that, or in a nightclub or something, she put 7 drops under someone's tongue, and they wouldn't high on anything. They would just, or might be 1 glass of wine for the whole night. And they would just have this essence of eternal light, eternal youth, and they would just love it. They would just feel high as a kite. And it's quite sweet, quite lovely.
Here's an interesting factor about homeopathic. I think that Ormus is the thing in water that carries the homeopathic resonance. So whatever homeopathic remedy you put in the water, it's carried by the ormus that's in that water. Even if the water is distilled water, I think there's still ormus in it. And my first encounter with a homeopathic remedy that was related to ormus was a lady in Australia made a homeopathic remedy for me from some ormus that Jim made, and basically just took a little bit of that homeopathic, took a little bit of that ormus and diluted it and diluted it and diluted it homeopathically with the addition of a homeopathic remedy for a condition that I was dealing with, and it seemed to help a lot.
I've had a very similar idea, and that makes a lot of sense. It's like turbocharging your homeopathic medicine, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And I think the ormus just gets in touch with our body's own innate ability to heal. And when you have the rheumatoid arthritis, the deformed hand going back to its normal shape, it's because that normal was there in the golden blueprint level. And so I bet that if she had just taken ormus water, it would have happened over time. It probably would have taken a lot longer time, but what was the actual product that she took?
She took, I believe it was Priestess Alchemy product.
Priestess?
Priestess Alchemy product.
Uh-huh. That's the one who makes the Tut's Tail?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same lady, yeah. Well, that's pretty amazing. This is all very exciting. Thank you for the rheumatoid arthritis, David. I'm going to get right on that. But you're not, your office, this phone number wouldn't be open until Monday, is that right?
Probably best to call on Monday because my assistant is up in Los Angeles right now buying Christmas presents for all her friends and relatives and family and everything. So she probably won't get back to you until Monday.
Okay, great.
Great, awesome. Hey, I just wanted to mention that I really appreciate everybody's desire to learn more about ormus, and just the interest is really heartening because it seems like there's been a big upsurge in the last 2 or 3 years, and that's really where we kind of need to be in order to get our whole civilization moving in the right direction, you know, and opening up a whole new vista of science. And it's just really, it's really enlivening and heartening to hear, you know, from everybody that you have this interest in the subject matter.
So
do you have any other
questions
out there?
We're running out of time here.
David, do you have a lot of, have you been taking a lot of pictures, nevertheless, of your plant ormus effects?
Yeah, I have. I've been taking pictures and I'm going to eventually. What I'm doing is just taking befores, right, and then 6 months
uh-huh.
in, then a year. So I'm on that program, and we'll see how it all pans. But I'm definitely on par to show like out of the slideshow. Here's year one, here's year two, here's year three, here's year five, 10, you know, all that. So I'm on.
Oh, great.
And what about David? What do you think about aloe vera as a carrier for ormus, for skin creams, that kind of thing? Would that, that's what I'm thinking of, making a Fountain of Youth type products. Do you think that aloe vera would be the best carrier for that, for the skin?
It's one of the best carriers, there's no question about it. Aloe vera really responds favorably to dead sea salt extracts, unbelievably, and ocean water and everything else. Noni also is really high on the list as well, so I want to throw that out there because I'm involved in San Diego. When I'm in San Diego County, and the way I've done it before was I've grown a lot of aloe vera here, but
mm-hmm.
now we have this farm in Hawaii, and we're mostly growing noni, and so the focus has changed to noni, which I believe actually has a higher polysaccharide fraction than aloe vera does. Surprise, surprise.
Hmm.
And there's, are any
actually,
of your products? Are any of the products, the food products you sell, or the plant products you sell, are any of them grown with ormus?
Yeah, but I don't put them on the web because they're only a certain amount that I can sell, and if I put it up on the website, it goes too fast. So what we do with those is I'll have, say, you know, I don't know, 60 or, you know, 100 bags of this or that, and I'll sell them at events or to people who are on thebestdayever.com or friends or, you know what I mean? So we're not scaled up to that level yet, but it's coming, and we're working on scaling, for example, like, you know, we do a lot of stuff down in Peru, and what we're doing is we want to scale up the wet method with ocean water for all the olive farms and pecan farms that we have down there that we work with. So that's something.
Well, you would be willing maybe to share some of this with the 27 participants that are remaining on this call.
Yeah, we want the stuff.
Two questions. What's the best source for understanding Steiner's ideas of alchemy?
Oh, that's a tough question. The question was, what's the best source of understanding Steiner's understandings of alchemy? I would probably recommend the series that I picked up from the Steiner bookstore in New York City. It's a series, and it's like from Einstein to elephants, from limestone to, it's like all these little quirky little sections of his lectures that are put under, it's probably 8, 9, 10 books, and it's a series.
Yeah.
It's like from cocaine to something else, from Einstein to this, from elephants to whatever, and each book is a different kind of categorization of his different lectures.
And where is that available?
I picked it up directly from the Steiner bookstore in New York City. You probably can find them online.
It's all published by the Anthroposophical Press. So maybe you can get it online from Anthroposophical Press, because they publish all Steiner's.
And also, you gave examples of vitamin C and chocolate as sun octases. Could you give more sun food more examples? And do planets have their own food equivalents that you know of?
I didn't quite catch all that. Can you just repeat that again?
Sure. You gave examples of vitamin C and chocolate as sun food octaves. And I was wondering, do planets have their own food equivalents that you know of? Planets?
Or do thoughts have their own food equivalents? Was that the question?
No, planets.
Oh, planets. Oh, okay. I was just thinking that. It's funny you should even say that. I was thinking about Mars. I mean, Mars, it has the energy of iron, of course, and that's, you know, it's traditional metal and sacred metal that it's been associated with. And, yes, planets have consciousness. There's a huge body of evidence that Nikola Tesla, received much of his information from the planet Venus.
Okay.
Mars is more iron and war-oriented and aggressive.
And do you have more examples of sun octave foods?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Do you have more examples of sun octave foods?
Oh, of sun octaves. Well, yeah, I guess, you know, the emotion of falling in love is that same emotion of that sun energy, right? The heart energy and the love energy. The bond between mother and child, right, at the moment of birth. That's on that same octave. Here's another one. Reishi mushroom is right on that same octave. Reishi mushroom is also on the octave. And this, I'm by no means a Steiner. I mean, Steiner understood this stuff from a complete, you know, intuitive, instinctive level, whereas I've had to kind of use these metaphors in order to understand what Steiner was onto and how he really viewed the world. And then once I took that into his writings, then I could kind of go, okay, now it's making sense. Here's what he was getting at here.
Okay.
Now, David, because I promised people that you would explore the connection and possibly even a recipe might pop out of your mind about combining ormus and chocolate.
Yeah, well, Oregon chocolate. We have a chocolate factory in Marin County, Sacred Chocolate, if you're interested in that. And we are in the process of getting our Ormus powdered down to add it into the chocolate. Now, you can do this at home. You can get all kinds of raw chocolate products now. You can blend things in. You can literally take your Ormus minerals and just throw them right into a chocolate drink. Now, is there a connection between chocolate and Ormus, and do they help each other, and do they amplify each other? And the answer appears to be yeah. Yeah, chocolate is an amplifier. When you add anything to chocolate, it amplifies its effect in a number of ways, a very interesting and alchemical number of ways, including the phenethylamine's ability to dilate capillaries, theobromine's ability to dilate capillaries and allow more nutrients to get in, chocolate's effect on making you feel good, which actually normalizes digestion, which allows you to absorb more. Chocolate's effects based on its minerals. Chocolate's super high in magnesium. It's the highest magnesium content food in the world. And what does that mean? Well, magnesium is all about detoxification and cleansing and opening up pathways of cleansing. So magnesium helps to bring the goodies in and get the old baddies out, get the toxins out. And that's a huge aspect of all this as well, because if we're going to get in the good stuff, like Ormus minerals, for example, well, we're going to have to push out the bad and get rid of the toxins and let those go out. Magnesium facilitates that. Magnesium also is strongly related to regulating hormone cycles. And if you throw the master switches on hormones, you're going to affect metabolism instantaneously. Whereas, you could take vitamin C all day, and, yeah, you'll feel benefits. But if you suddenly, throw in, human growth hormone into the equation, you've got a whole different game going on. So hormones are really bigger switches in the game of nutrition. And when you can throw those switches on and make them work better, well, you got something. And that's why we really recommend, you take the strong hormone types of foods like maca, mix it with chocolate, throw in your minerals, your Ormus minerals, mix it all together, and then you've got kind of a super blend, superfood, Ormus, a stro beverage. And that's the kind of stuff that I live on, that kind of stuff.
Fantastic.
Yes.
You mentioned water is not H2O. Could you clarify this?
Okay, well, is water H2O? When I was in ninth grade, my chemistry teacher, we were playing around with this water, and my chemistry teacher said, yeah, don't drink that water. And I was like, what do you mean don't drink that water? Because it wasn't distilled water, it was chemical water. And what's chemical water? Mm-hmm. Chemical water is when hydrogen gas and oxygen gas are combined with each other to make what's called chemical water. If you drink enough chemical water, it can actually kill you. So H2O is actually toxic. And my theory is now that it probably has to draw all kinds of things into itself, including Ormus, to make it whole, and therefore can actually rob you of vital nutrients and minerals to make itself whole. It's probably why that's true. So, for example, we know that water consists of hydrogen, oxygen, carbon, Ormus, silica, and probably sulfur. So at least those five, and probably sulfur is involved as well. And that's just based on the research that's come down the pipe about water over the last 50 years or so.
I've heard that water, if it's chemical water, and I haven't got confirmation of this, I'd like to get some, that chemical water, water that's made by burning hydrogen and oxygen, weighs something like 7.3 or 7.5 pounds per gallon, whereas ordinary water, even triple distilled water, weighs 8.33 pounds per gallon. So there's something in water that even ordinary scientists will acknowledge that they can't figure out what it is.
Rainwater weighs even more than that.
Hey, David, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Like broccoli, like onions, like garlic, I heard it de-spins the Ormus. Did you have any feelings about that?
That if you take in, I'm sorry, say that again.
If you take in foods high in sulfur or sulfide.
Oh, right. Okay, that's what I thought you said.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll repeat the question for you. So foods that are high in sulfur, for example, broccoli, garlic, the cruciferous vegetables, et cetera, do they deactivate Ormus? There's different theories in the Ormus community about that. My feeling from experience is this. if you take an isolated ormus element like ormus gold and you take it with MSM, there's some kind of reaction that would happen when you take those things simultaneously that is not right. Something goes wrong in that reaction. I don't know exactly what that is. I suspect that the MSM either has so much energy in it that it can actually flip the ormus gold in back into gold, or it's inhibiting your body's ability to absorb it, or both, or something else I don't even know. I don't have a lot of information on that, but my experience has showed me that there's some truth to that. However, my experience has shown me that there's no relationship between sulfur as it is bound in, say, a cruciferous vegetable or as it's bound in aloe vera, that has any effect on ormus absorption whatsoever if it's all natural, everything is in its natural form. And Barry might be able to give us a little more detail on that, but that's been my experience.
I would totally agree. I think that makes good sense.
You could grow broccoli with it.
Just the chemical sulfur that seems to be involved with dropping it to metal, not organic compounds involving it.
Thank you.
Yeah, good question. Very good question.
Can I add on to that question?
Sure.
Well, how long would you stagger, like, say if you're taking 7,500 milligrams of MSM every day? Like, how many hours between that and your ormus would you separate them?
That's a good question. I mean, there's a bunch of guys in my office who were doing, they were staggering it, like 12 hours. So they do ormus gold, for example, in the morning, then MSM in the evening. MSM, depending on what source you're reading, will last inside your metabolism in an active way for somewhere between 4 to 12 hours, depending on what source you're reading about. And therefore, if you stagger it on opposite ends of the day, that would probably work. My experience, though, has taught me this, that if you aren't taking high amounts of ormus minerals, you don't need to take MSM. You don't need sulfur. It does the same trick.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. All right. Thanks a lot for the explanation.
You bet. Right on.
So, listen, we've been on the phone now for a couple of hours easy, and that's plus with you coming on early. So we're down to our last question. So who's it going to be?
What about hemp seed?
Hemp seed, great. I have had several friends growing hemp varieties using things other than using ormus extracts, dead sea salt extracts, ocean water extracts, et cetera, et cetera. And there's no question that hemp is one of the high bearers of ormus. There's no question about it. And if you look at hemp and, like, the structure of the leaf, it's a silica-based leaf. So there you go. It's very likely that it's holding those ormus compounds in the silica compounds of the leaf. It's very likely that the ormus is showing up in the oils inside the hemp seed. There's been a long affiliation with hemp seed and hemp oil and its ability to combat rheumatoid arthritis and to create healthy joints, and that's probably related to its ormus content. Hemp is, you know, very likely the most important plant in the entire world, and there's a lot of arguments that would support that. And I have grown hemp with ormus in my garden, and it's absolutely dynamite. It's the best ever.
I'll second that. Certainly is ending on a high note there.
Nice one.
Let me just say this one more thing about grown / high ormus content hemp varieties. The variety I will not mention, but I think you'll be able to fill in the blanks. I don't smoke anything like that, but I will eat it just like a food. And, yes, it does affect you if you eat it. And the effects, if it's ocean-grown or ormus-grown, are much more they're much more colorful, much more psychedelic, much less on the other energies of, like, dark energies or cloudiness or paranoia or any of that kind of stuff is not present. And so there's no question that the high notes of what that plant can offer are better facilitated if it's grown with ormus or ormus extracts or ocean water.
Without question.
Yeah, so now you're actually tapping into the in yourself psychically clean there too, David, because I've noticed an enormous amount of people who have even alcohol or any kind of mind-altering substances tend to leave themselves open for attraction to entities who just want to hitchhike in their psyche. And so I presume that you're telling me that this will keep your field clear.
I think that's a good presumption. And we talked about this, Dennis, when we had our conversation the other day, that Ormus is kind of programmable. You know, there's nothing in the way between you and what that Ormus molecule can do. And so if you put out the intention and, you know, of purity and what those frequencies of those Ormus minerals represent, you put that, your intention in that too, it's kind of like, you know, you're hitting the hyperspace button. You're accelerating at an enormously fast pace. And that to me is really where the future of positive thinking is and the law of attraction and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, in fact, just to fill you guys in, David and I were talking about how water has memory, and by definition, you can extend that to Ormus has memory, and Ormus is an accelerator, Ormus is a potentiator, Ormus is an amplifier, and you can amplify and potentiate any intention you have whatsoever by telling your intention into the Ormus, and you can program your Ormus with whatever properties that you want to give to it. Why not tell your Ormus that it is an Ormus that benefits the whole planet? Why not tell your Ormus that it produces huge and beneficial value for millions of people? Why can't it Ormus be just... How come Ormus would have any limits on what it can do? The limits are with us. Yeah?
There you go. Ormus gives you not just wings, but Ormus gives you traction. More traction than lava. Lava, you've heard of the law of attraction, but Ormus gives you even more traction.
Oh, God, that's complex.
I'm going to declare this call done. And
hey, thank you so much,
Dennis.
Before you sign off, just say,
tell us your name and say goodbye. And listen,
right on,
I want to thank you so much, David. Best call ever, buddy.
Right on. Hey, thanks, everybody. Thanks, Barry. Thanks, Dennis. Thanks to the team on the phone. Have the best day ever. Signing off. I'll see you on the other side of the universe.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Leaving now. They're not saying goodbye. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.